Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because we have with Mr. Charles Lewis. He's written a book about the selling of the presidency, 2004. Mr. Lewis, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your this idea of selling the presidency? Why I thought the presidency was won out there, you know, on the field of public opinion, people voting for one or another candidate because, of course, of their basic positions. Are you suggesting that they are our political representatives are selling their purposes to the highest bidder, that this $200 million that President Bush is raising, and I don't know how much Kerry will raise, is going to be used to buy influence with our elected officials?
Well, you know, yes, is the short answer. You know, basically, 96% of the American people don't give a penny to any politician, and when you raise tens of millions of dollars, there are a good number of folks who give and are investing in the political process and, you know, coming from various vested interests. And so we write the buying of the president the last three elections, 96, 2000, and now, to look at who's behind these presidential candidates, who are the powers that be around them, essentially, and shouldn't we know that as voters before the election, not after?
But are you suggesting that it's just one political party, or do both political parties have their services up for sale?
Oh, no. Unfortunately, it's the whole system, and it's both parties. No one has a corner on this. You know, these powerful interests want something from government. They know how to get it, and they know how to swarm like locusts over the entire process. And what we do at my organization, the Center for Public Integrity in Washington, is track it in great detail with millions of records, hundreds of interviews, and, you know, dozens of researchers over the course of a year.
Well, I certainly am glad that you're doing that, because I think somebody needs to be able to tell the American people what's really going on. And, you know, most people are just so naive about the political process. They would like to believe it's just exactly as we learned it in school. And of course, the American people are making the decisions. But those decisions really are pretty well made for us by the people who were able to buy the best politicians money can buy.
Well, I think that's right. And so we need to cut through it and look more closely. And that's what we're trying to do, for sure. Thanks for the encouragement.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment with Mr. Lewis. Charles Lewis, his book, The Buying of the Presidency, 2004. He's written it in 1996, in the year 2000. And again, and I think it's so important, you'll be able to understand maybe the Medicare drug bill and a few of the other things when we see who's giving large sums of money to the president right now. But then John Kerry, we don't want to just pick on the Democrats, pardon me, on the Republicans. It's sort of bipartisan. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest today is Charles Lewis from the Center for Public Integrity?
Yeah, Center for Public Integrity, right.
And Charles Lewis has written a book. It's called The Buying of the Presidency, 2004. Now, he's analyzed this in 1996, the year 2000, and he talks about the special interest groups, the people with the millions and millions of dollars who are willing to give large sums of money to both presidential candidates. George Bush is talking about raising $200 million, the largest sum of money ever used on any presidential election, so he can win the election. How much do you think that John Kerry is going to be able to raise?
Well, you know, a fraction of that. He's trying to raise 80 or 90 million. No Democrat has ever raised more than 40 or 50 million, so this would be astonishing if he pulls it off. But
well, I heard that, of course, the unions are talking about spending about $40 million on his candidacy. So.
Right. Well, the unions are you know, always very active helping Democrats, and they'll be no different in this case. And when we talk about how much is being spent, I'm referring mostly to the direct contributions to the candidates, the outside money spent by all kinds of interests, unions and individual millionaires and all kinds of folks out there. That is a continuing problem in our process. Even though we reformed the process with McCain-Feingold, there are hundreds of these outside groups now spending, it'll be between $100 and $200 million just by outside groups trying to influence the election, independent, quote unquote, of Mr. Bush or Mr. Kerry. And so you're going to have several months, half a year at least, coming up between now and Labor Day of nasty negative ads paid for by the candidates and paid for by these outside groups that are also going to try to influence and persuade Americans to vote a certain way.
Well, my understanding, though, that McCain-Feingold really didn't do much to stop soft money, but what it did do was stop special interest groups from publishing the voting record of a lot of congressmen out there who don't want their constituents to know how they voted. Are you concerned about that?
I have a long list of things I'm concerned about. I'm not sure where that fits on the list, but you know, McCain-Feingold is not changing a lot of in terms of the sheer dollar amount that comes in.
Well, my concern is, of course, it's going to stop these groups from publishing the voting records. That's what really bothers me.
Right. I'm not, you know, where I'm coming from is I don't know enough about that. That's not
hold that thought right there.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Charles Lewis, and he comes from the Center for Public Integrity, and he's written a book on the buying of the presidency for the year 2004. So why don't you just sort of pick up, well, who's putting up the big bucks? I understand George Soros is talking about putting a $5 million or so into defeating President Bush, but then the people are putting up an awful lot of money on the other side as well.
Well, that's right. Soros, the billionaire financier, has actually said he's going to spend at least $10 million or more. And a lot of these groups, individuals and companies and labor unions, are going to spend hundreds, probably total, $200-300 million in this election in outside money. Bush and Kerry are raising astonishing sums of money. Bush has raised already well past $160 million. He raised $131 million last year. That's $600,000 a day. This is double his record that he set back in 99 and 2000. So, you know, we have never seen numbers like this in the past. You don't raise money like that from backyard barbecues and bake sales.
In fact, you'd have a hard time, getting enough people to the Lincoln bedroom to raise
that
sort of money.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
Of course, we're very, very critical of Bill Clinton. I happen to come from the Republicans' perspective. We're critical of Bill Clinton for doing what he did. But, you know, of course, when the Republicans do it, you just have to understand that that's all right. I don't think it is all right. I think we should be concerned when both political parties are doing this because they're selling their souls. Nobody gives you $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 just because they like the way you smile.
Well, exactly. I mean, we actually broke the Lincoln bedroom scandal with Clinton here at the Center for Public Integrity. And, you know, Bush does not have as many guests over as Clinton did. Clinton had 938 people in the first 4 years of his presidency, and I think Bush has got a fraction of that number, really. But using the perks of power, having donors stay overnight and those kinds of things, give face time and all that kind of stuff to the folks who are writing the checks, and that's as old as politics itself, and it transcends party. But the average American never comes in contact with the politicians. 96% don't give money to politicians. 100 million, half the electorate, don't vote routinely in every national election. And so there's a problem here that the people that are participating the most happen to be those who want something in return frequently, and we need to know who they are. And so the Buying the President 2004 is a way to lay that out, and people can see, in you know, name names and see a dollar amounts and see who's giving how much and all that kind of stuff. It needs to be told, I think.
Well, do a lot of people contribute to both political parties, or is that a rarity?
No, they do. You know, for example, the telecommunication companies and the banks and the Wall Street financial sector both are heavy contributors to both Kerry and Bush. And remembering that Bush has raised about five times more money than Kerry in his career, so the dimension of the giving to the two is vastly different. But Kerry's top 10 contributors do not have a single labor union in them. He is on the Commerce and Finance Committees. These are committees that have jurisdiction over those kinds of interests. And Bush, of course, as a Republican and as a sitting president, the financial sector, you know, is well acquainted with him and needs to know him and be close to him, and they are. And in that sense, that you have similar donors giving to both candidates, both major candidates. Now, there are some industries, oil and gas and mining, that give 80% or more of their money to the Republicans. Right now, the pharmaceutical industry gives more than 80% of its money to the Republicans. Obviously, the trial lawyers and labor unions give very heavily to the Democrats and have for years. So it depends on the powerful interest, you know, which it doesn't always hold that they give to both parties. Some of them are very loyal to one party, but sometimes money and power go together. So pharmaceutical companies back in 92 gave evenly to the two parties when we had divided government. Now that one party controls the House, the Senate, and the White House, so you're seeing a lot of the money from pharmaceutical companies going to one party, the GOP, but the public, it might be useful to know that and to know it in great detail and to go look, sort of lift up the hood of the car and look underneath.
Well, you know, what really disturbs me about the pharmaceutical industry is this campaign that the Bush administration has been waging against buying goods, drugs for a half or a third up in Canada, exactly the same drugs. In fact, these drugs aren't even made in America. A lot of them are made over in Europe for our major pharmaceutical companies. They ship them from Europe to the United States and triple the price. They ship them to Canada for a third the price. Why can't we go to Canada and buy them? Oh, the government is afraid. We're here to help you. You know, you don't want to do that. It's illegal. FDA has said it's illegal. You can't buy those same drugs up in Canada for a cheaper price, and they're driving the price up. You know, first of all, so the pharmaceutical companies can really take advantage of the older people who are, and then, of course, I think it's being used to justify this new Medicare bill by drugs, which I think is going to be sort of a transfer of taxpayers' money into the coffers of the drug companies. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I am very worried about the power of the pharmaceutical industry that you were just talking about, and you know, for this book, we did a lot of research, and there are internal emails and memos from pharmaceutical industry lobbyists and certain politicians about the policies being the same and embracing the party. And so you can be sure that if the administration is worried about Canada and the prescription drugs coming in from Canada, it's because the industry has asked them to keep those things at bay because it hurts their profits, and that's directly what's happening. The Medicare bill itself, I mean, this recent fellow, Richard Foster, the Medicare official inside the Department of Health and Human Services, who was told not to tell Congress or the public how much it was really going to cost, and he was told he would be fired if he told the truth and talked about it. I think it's a huge scandal. I don't see anyone holding a hearing about it, which bothers me. But I do worry about the money that's going into it. Clearly, it's more money than anyone realized, or at least now we're learning. Some people realized it internally, but they couldn't talk about it. And who it transfers resources to. I think all of that still needs to be shaken out, but there is a lot of consternation right now. A lot of people think that this thing was missold or misrepresented to the public, and there's a lot of anger right now about what really happened when that thing passed.
Well, I think that they offered to bribe one of the congressmen by giving
right.
money. You know, these things are illegal.
But well, they should be illegal. I mean, they are illegal, but it's only illegal if someone actually prosecutes.
But who's going to prosecute somebody in the Republican Party for doing something Republican administration wanted done? Now, I'm a lifelong Republican, but I think that you have to speak out and you have to be honest. And when you've got corruption at the highest levels of government, somebody's got to talk about it, because you lost your moral foundation. When you lose your moral foundation as a nation, why, that nation's got to be destroyed.
Well, no, I agree. I mean, what worries me is what I jokingly refer to sometimes as the death of investigation. If the Justice Department and the Attorney General don't think a member of Congress announcing to someone that he was offered a certain amount of money and assistance for his son's campaign if he would vote a certain way on the case of the Medicare legislation, if the Justice Department doesn't think that's a violation of law and they don't even want to look into it, and if no one on Capitol Hill... And you're right, it's all Republicans right now, and they realize anything they do could embarrass the president, so no one wants to go there. But the silence is deafening, and, you know, when you don't investigate these things, then it basically says it's okay to the public, and it basically means everyone's looking the other way, and I don't care what party anybody is, that's not right.
Well, I think that it happens in both political parties.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Nobody can question when you give these massive amounts of money to senators or to congressmen, it's going to be used for their own purposes. Robert Dole, of course, was the House Senate Majority Leader, Arthur Daniels Midland wanted, of course, to have ethanol, wanted to get legislation, so you had to add ethanol to gasoline. They were going to make billions of dollars. So, Robert Dole does that, and they give a couple of $100,000 to his foundation for crippled people or something of that sort. I mean, anybody who thinks that they gave that money just because they're concerned about crippled people, I think is incredibly naive. But where is the outcry? Well, that, after all, Robert Dole is such a nice guy. The Democrats do it as well. I remember when Tom Foley was the House Speaker, and he got into IPOs, and he made money on 19 of 20 IPOs. He made $100,000 on IPOs. That's just like Hillary Clinton playing the commodity market and making $100,000 in cattle futures. These things just don't happen unless somebody's shoveling money in your direction. And they're not doing that just because they like the people. When are the American people going to say the reason this happens is because you give these politicians all the power? If we only limited their power, we wouldn't have the corruption. If we had a government like we used to have, where the power of the central government was limited, well, it wouldn't do any good to bribe the politicians because you couldn't get anything in return for it.
Well, you're right. As long as there's honey, there's going to be flies. There's going to be people making money from power, and you're going to have, whether it's IPOs or you're absolutely right. The net worth of public servants generally goes up over time, and if you're in Congress today, you have to raise money all the time from people of great means and resources, and they're frequently giving them stock tips and telling them what to invest in addition to the opportunities. You have members of Congress quitting in the middle of their terms now to become lobbyists, making $1 and $2 million. And, you know, when you have those kinds of lucrative opportunities all over the place, and public service is demeaned, and people actually want to make a buck in the private sector, and the government was just a way to get to that point.
We'll be right back here in just a moment with Charles Lewis, author of The Selling of the Presidency, 2004. That will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, En Route to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy,
and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaa will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today, and unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaa.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I just want to mention some of the other items that we do carry. One of them is the Miracle 2 products, and we can't make any health claims for them, but we can tell you that an awful lot of people who use the Miracle 2 products swear they wouldn't be without them, and they tell us that really how they've helped them with rashes and acne and how it has helped with the upper and lower gastrointestinal tract symptoms. And I wouldn't be without my moisturizing soap. I've used it for a couple of years. It's taken care of a rash that I had. I know that Joyce Riley, who is a good friend, has given it to Gulf War veterans, and nothing would help their rashes, and this seems to have helped. And now all you can do is just say try it and see if it'll do any good for you. If you'd like to get an introductory offer at a reduced price, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and order the introductory offer to the Miracle 2 soap products, the soap, the moisturizing soap, the lotion, the gel, and the neutralizing solution. And well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Charles Lewis, and it's the buying of the presidency, isn't it?
Yeah, the buying of the presidency.
Yeah. All right, fine. How can people get hold of your book?
Yeah, it's in bookstores nationwide. It's been on the New York Times bestseller list for several weeks. Amazon, bookstores, anywhere. It should be pretty easily gotten, I think.
All right, the buying of the presidency, and we certainly recommend that you get it. I think you have to understand we got problems in both political parties, and it's not going to change until we get the responsible people. Would you want to talk a little bit about who some of the people are putting up the big bucks, say, first for the Republicans and then for the Democrats?
Sure. Well, for the Republicans, you have Philip Morris is the top contributor in the last 25 years, giving over $10 million. You have three tobacco companies in the top 12 donors. You have most major industries give about two-thirds of their money to the Republican Party, with some exceptions. Trial lawyers and labor unions are very heavily invested in the Democratic Party. 6 of the top 10 patrons of the Democratic Party are labor unions. the number one donor in the Democratic Party and the number one donor in American politics in the last quarter century is a labor union, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, which has given between $50 and $60 million if you count their outside so-called 527 organization, which has gotten about $40 million alone. So in the buying of the present 2004, we lay all the donors, the top 50 patrons for both political parties going back 25 years, and then we list the top 10 career patrons, we call them, for every, for Kerry and for Bush, and we wrote this last year, so we have all of the presidential candidates in the Democratic side, two or three of whom are have been mentioned as running mates for Kerry. So if you want to see who's behind John Edwards or Senator Graham of Florida or Richard Gephardt of Missouri, of their information, not to mention fully developed chapters about their life story and who's behind them, all of that is laid out in great detail.
And, of course, Dick Gephardt, where does he get a lot of his money from?
Well, it was kind of interesting. His top number one contributor is Anheuser-Busch. Remember, he's from Missouri. They're based in St. Louis. They're probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, employer in his district. But on five occasions, he has supported the interests of the alcohol industry and not having any taxes on alcohol to pay for things like health care over the years. He's taken in $500,000 from Anheuser-Busch. There are a lot of labor unions, as you can imagine, are a big part of his interest as well, although Kucinich had more than anyone. But you have the Teamsters are his third highest patron, the electrical workers. You have telecommunication companies like SBC. You have companies like Boeing, United Oil Workers.
Wait a minute, why would Boeing be giving money to somebody in St. Louis?
That's a really good question. I could only be that a company, I'm losing track of all these defense contractors because they sometimes merge together. I'm wondering if McDonnell Douglas was purchased by Boeing or if there's some explanation we don't know about that would explain that, because on its face it does look odd.
I know. Let's see. Now, Lockheed purchased something else. Maybe Boeing did purchase McDonnell Douglas.
Because they used, as I recall, used to be in Missouri. At least they had a big plant in St. Louis, I thought. But anyway, so those are some of his interests. American Hospital Association is another big interest, number four on his list, $210,000 over his career. A law firm, Brian Cave, is his second highest patron. So that's some of his background. Of course, Edwards is heavy, very heavy trial lawyers. 22 of his top 25 patrons are trial lawyers, but his top contributor is a Hollywood producer named Stephen Bing, who has given over $900,000. He has a company called Shangri-La Entertainment, but that's a little bit peculiar for a first-term senator to have the largest single contributor in the buying of the president book, but in fact that's the case.
Well, you know, there are limits on how much money you can give. I think we're limited
right
to $1,000 or $2,000.
Right.
And when we get back here in just a moment, I want you to explain to us how it would be that you and I would go to jail if we gave that amount of money. But of course, these people of great wealth can give almost unlimited amounts of money because there are gimmicks built in the election laws that seem to favor one group over another. So we're going to be back here in just a minute with Charles Lewis, and we'll open up our calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Love to hear from you. But I think this is such an important subject because I really hate to have to talk about the finest politicians money can buy, but that's the reality.
Help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, En Route to Global Occupation.
Hello?
his second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaa will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today, and unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaa.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I just want to mention that we carry certain products. One of them, of course, is the Big Berkey water filter. And, of course, if you'd like to have fresher water, if you don't like the taste of your water, or if you're in a situation where you need to have your water filtered to take out the herbicides and pesticides and bacteria, maybe you're traveling, maybe you're out on a trip someplace, this is a wonderful way to get fresh water. But if there ever is an emergency, it would certainly be nice to know that you have a means of getting filtered water that would be potable. Now, the Big Berkey has been used by missionaries for 150 years. It made of stainless steel. You pour the water in the top, goes through the ceramic filters, filled with activated carbon, comes out the bottom, and it's potable. It's available in every state in the Union except California and Iowa. It's $239, and, of course, plus shipping. And if you buy it through us, you get a four-tape set or a video. Now, if you're in California, why, you can get something called the Berkey Light. And the Berkey Light is made of Lexan. You can see the water level. The filters really work much more efficiently. Now, this is what we have. The problem is, although it's a little cheaper, it's $199 plus shipping, why, you have to change the filters every 2 to 4 years, depending upon how much you use it. But you can really clean up your water now if you have fluoride in your water. Why, of course, you can get special post filters for both the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light that'll take the fluoride and the arsenic out. They last 6 months or so. So if you'd like to see the filters, go to our website at 1-800-544-8927 or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 and order yourself a Big Berkey or a Berkey Light water filter. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Charles Lewis. Charles Lewis, his book is The Buying of the Presidency, 2004. Mr. Lewis, do you have a website at all? Mr. Lewis? Mr. Lewis, I think that we lost Mr. Lewis, and I'm going to ask my secretary to get him back on. Maybe he has to take off at half hour. If that's the case, why? Of course, it'll be just you and me from here on out. So we will welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment on what we've been talking about or perhaps what we talked about the last hour. And for those of you who didn't hear that program, why, we actually had an opportunity to review the 60-minute program that was viewed last night, where Richard Clark, who was the former czar of terrorism, he held a cabinet position under the first Bush presidency and under the Clinton administration. And, of course, they did away with the position of czar of terrorism during the second Bush administration, when, of course, this was the time of the greatest threat. Now, why did they play down the terrorist threat when they knew the attack was coming? How did they know the attack was coming? Well, if you read the testimony of Eleanor Hill before the Joint Select Committee, and that was in September 18th of the year 2002, and we do provide that through Radio Liberty. You can actually purchase that from us if you want to, or you can get it down off the internet. That's Eleanor Hill testimony before the Joint Select Committee. If you would like to read what she had to say, but basically she pointed out the fact that the Intelligence Committee had all sorts of evidence. I should say the intelligence community had all sorts of evidence there was going to be an attack here in the United States. And, of course, the government of Morocco had said there's going to be an attack in the United States. The government of Jordan, the government of Germany, the Mossad had warned us. They had at least 11 different countries said there's going to be an attack in the United States. And yet, of course, the intelligence community said, oh, no, 99% sure it's going to be overseas. Well, why would you say that? Very simply, because you have to have an explanation for why you did nothing to stop the attack on September 11th, 2001. In fact, one of the most damning bits of evidence, and we've talked about this before, but you really need to get it, it's actually in my February newsletter, it is the testimony of Norman Mineta. This is the 911 Commission. You have to understand there's two commissions. There's the Select Committee, which is made up of representatives of the intelligence community from both the House of Representatives and the Senate. Well, the president refused to cooperate with that committee, and then whatever information they did give, they gave him volumes of information, but they left out the important things, and then they censored the final committee report. Now, why would you do that if there's nothing to hide? Oh, well, we didn't want the American people to know that the Saudis had financed it. They took out 28 pages on the Saudis, and everybody heard about the 28 pages they censored. But I got the report, and I went through it. I went through 200 pages, 79 pages, almost 80 pages, in addition to those 28 pages on the Saudis had things censored out. They didn't want the American people to know the truth. And if there's nothing to conceal, why do they conceal it? Well, let me tell you what Norman Mineta said, and you'll find this. We actually have this in my both the February and the March newsletter. We'll tell you the significance probably in the April newsletter when I get around to writing that. But in the March newsletter or the February newsletter, Norman Mineta, who is Secretary of Transportation, and you know that we have the Mineta Highway over in the San Jose area. That's, I believe, Route 880. And we have the Mineta Airport. And he was a Democrat, but they put him in the charge of the Department of Transportation. I figured that they probably figured he was reliable. But actually, he sort of let the cat out of the bag when he testified. He testified on May 23rd of the year 2003. Before the 911 Commission. That is the second commission. That's the cover-up commission. The president insisted on appointing so many of the people on that commission, people he knew would be reliable and would simply cover up from the American public. But here they, of course, got Norman Mineta in to testify, and he gives us regular canned testimony. And then they're asking him some questions, and he says, well, it was on the morning of September 11th. And of course, the North Tower and the South Tower of the World Trade Center had been hit. So he goes to the White House, and he arrives there. They're evacuating the White House. It's about 9:15 in the morning. And so because he's a member of the president's cabinet, he is taken down by the Secret Service into a bunker. It's known as the President's Emergency Operating Center. It's in the basement of the White House. They're very, very close to it. And this is where, of course, they're monitoring what's going on. Now, the North and South Towers have been hit, but, of course, the Pentagon has not yet been hit. So he's sitting there with Dick Cheney, and an aide rushes into the room and says the plane is 50 miles out. That's the plane that's going to come and hit the Pentagon. And then a few minutes later, the aide rushes in and says the plane is 30 miles out. And then the aide comes in and says, the plane is 10 miles out. Do the orders still stand? And according to Mineta, why, the president whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary? And, of course, what were the orders? Just a moment later, why, of course, the plane hit the Pentagon. Well, now, we know that there were planes in the air that morning. We know that they were sent from Langley Air Force Base. We know that an F-16 can fly about 30 miles an hour, 1,800 miles an hour, with the afterburners burning, but they didn't allow them to fly full speed. In fact, they didn't even allow them to fly directly to Washington, D.C. They knew the planes were coming in, the plane was coming in, and they sent the planes out over the Atlantic Ocean before they could turn around and come back in, and they weren't allowed to fly at full speed. And gee, they were 10 miles away when the plane hit the Pentagon. And then, of course, they dispatched planes from the Andrews Air Force Base. That is just, well, it's less than 1 minute away by, if you are in the air in an F-16, you can, and flying at full speed, you can be in Washington, D.C. in 1 minute. But those planes weren't armed. What madness was this when they knew an attack was coming? How do we know they knew an attack was coming? Because I know two people who were told ahead of time the attack was coming. Dr. Garth Nicholson, who you've heard and guest on my program many times, was told by an intelligence officer he had dealt with before, who wanted to get the information out, there was going to be an attack on the Pentagon. On the 11th of September, he sent emails out to several people. He notified people in government who he knew because he'd been working on the Gulf War syndrome for some time. He told them there's going to be an attack on the Pentagon on the 11th of September. David Shippers, and you remember David Shippers, of course, was the counsel for the House Committee that impeached President Clinton. So Shippers had a lot of connections in Washington, D.C. He's a Democrat. He's from Chicago. We voted for Bill Clinton, but he's an honest man. And, of course, he was contacted by people in the intelligence community, who they were. He's never admitted publicly. And, of course, nobody is going to invite these people to testify before the Select Committee or the 911 Commission, because the last thing they want is for the American people to understand that there really is was prior knowledge. And somebody, I don't know whether it was the president, but I do know that they knew the attack was coming, because David Shippers was told the attack was coming either in late August or early September. He went to Washington, D.C., and he knew all these people. He'd been there many times. He knew the attorney general. He knew people in key positions in Congress, and he wanted to tell them about the coming attack, and none of them would meet with him. Why? Well, there are two possibilities. One is they're incredibly stupid, and two is they did not want anybody to know that they were meeting with somebody who had told them that the attack was coming on the United States, because then, of course, they would be held responsible for not doing anything about the coming attack. And we know that the Attorney General, although we're told by Condoleezza Rice, why, who would have ever thought that the terrorists would hijack our planes and use them as missiles? We know that the Attorney General had flown just regular commercial airliners until just a month or two before the attack. And then, of course, he started chartering jets for his own safety. Well, let's say he started chartering jets to fly in. We know that Salman Rushdie, of the Satanic Verses fame, a man who lives undercover in Great Britain, was told he should not be flying in American or Canadian commercial jets on the 6th of September. And of course, he was gave an interview to the London Times on the 20th of September, 9 days after the attack, where he said, I think the government knew there was going to be an attack because I was told not to fly on those planes, either American or Canadian commercial planes, on the 6th of September. Now, what's so interesting about his story is not that he said that, but somebody is doing damage control. Somebody pulled the article down off the internet of the London Times, so you couldn't find that article. I read about it in other publications, tried to get it off the internet, it wasn't there, and it wasn't until we could actually get a copy of the London Times that we knew that this story was accurate. So if somebody is doing damage control, somebody is covering up the truth from the American people. The same thing happened with the story of Willie Brown, the mayor of San Francisco, who was notified the evening before, that was about 10 o'clock the evening before, that he should be very careful flying on the 11th of September. And I personally checked out with the public relations man who worked for Willie Brown, and he confirmed the story was accurate. But what was most interesting was it appeared in the early edition of the San Francisco Chronicle and then was pulled out of all other editions of the San Francisco Chronicle that day. Somebody didn't want that article widely circulated across America, and it wasn't. It only appeared in one edition, and then somebody pulled it down off the internet as well. That is damage control. You can see the hand of the CIA in this, and in the fact that they planted all sorts of evidence pointing towards the Islamic terrorists, the car that was left at the airport. by these terrorists who are so careful in doing all their planning, and yet they leave a car at the airport, you know, with all their radical Islamic writings and, you know, the prayers that they were supposed to do before the attack. And why would they do everything to point to the terrorists being Islamic hijackers? The story of the two passports, and we actually have a picture of the one that was on the FBI webpage of one of the passports that just happened to survive the fiery crash. Now, a couple of the black boxes were consumed. Most of the planes were consumed. The bodies were consumed. But the passport survived. One of them fluttered to the earth outside the one of the twin towers and was found a block or so away, belonging to one of the Islamic hijackers that the FBI insists are the people who were involved. And the other one survived the attack, or I should say the crash, the fiery crash of the plane there in Pennsylvania, where there was just a big hole in the ground and everything was incinerated. You couldn't even see any part of the plane. No part of the plane survived, but this one passport survived. Do you honestly believe that? And then, of course, after about 3 or 4 days, while they pulled it off the FBI website, this is damage control, because they figure even the American people aren't stupid enough to believe that. And so if it was real, why not? Why did they pull it down? If it wasn't real, why did they put it up? And you must understand, everything is perception. What can you get the American people to believe? They control our access to information. They tell us exactly what happened. They tell us about the telephone calls that occurred from the people on the plane. Well, cell phones don't work very well on airplanes. At least my understanding, they don't. But of course, we're told that the people were making telephone calls and saying, oh, we're being hijacked. And then, of course, they describe the hijackers. But the government won't release any of the videos of the hijackers getting on the plane. They won't release the manifest, which should have had the hijackers' names on them. If there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it? Why will they not release the presidential briefing on August 6th, where we know the president was told that the terrorists were going to hijack planes, of what we don't know whether they told him, whether they were going to, of course, use them as missiles. Everybody insists, of course, that we had no idea of what was going to happen or that the World Trade Center was a target. In fact, this is a lie. If you read Eleanor Hill's testimony, there was so much information they were going to hijack planes, and they knew the World Trade Center was a target. In fact, they'd already tried to destroy it back in 1993. But I think that the most important part of this incredible story is the story of Operation Bajinka. And if you've read the book, A Thousand Years for Revenge, by Peter Lance, an excellent book, you'll find a great deal of detail there about Operation Bajinka. And there was an associated plan where the Murad and Ramzi Yousef, who were working with a man named Mohammed Khalid Sheikh, maybe it was Sheikh Khalid Mohammed. He was the mastermind for the 9/11 plot, at least this is what we're told. And he was Osama bin Laden's right-hand man, or maybe al-Zawahiri's right-hand man. But they were meeting over there in the Philippines, and they happened to be meeting with a man named Terry Nichols. But of course, this is being totally suppressed from the American people, because you're not supposed to know there was any relationship between the Oklahoma City bombing and al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, because maybe people would begin to ask why we didn't do something a lot earlier about this. But anyway, as far as this, these meetings were held over there, and of course, the plan was all laid out on a laptop computer, which was captured by the, or obtained by the Philippine police. And of course, there was this plan there to hijack American planes and crash them into the World Trade Center, into the Pentagon, into the White House, into the Sears Tower, and the Transamerica Building. And the Philippine police gave this to the FBI. It's all laid out there. But if you doubt that, maybe they made a mistake. We have an article that appeared 2 months before the 9/11 attack. It appeared on the Internet, and it had to do with the attendants on United Airlines. And it was talking about Operation Bajinka. It laid it out exactly as I told you. They knew that they were going to, and this was what they feared. They were going to hijack planes and crash them into the World Trade Center, the White House, the Pentagon, and maybe the CIA building, I've forgotten, but of course the Sears Tower and the Transamerica Building. What's so interesting about that story is it disappeared off the internet as soon as this occurred, and the author was a man named Bill Gertz, and when I've talked to Bill, when he wrote a book about it, why, he left out the part about crashing the World Trade Center. All he said was it involved crashing into the CIA building, and that was the official party line. So I said, but you'd written this. I have the article you wrote ahead of time. He said, oh, that was a mistake. I shouldn't have written it. It wasn't accurate. Well, of course it was accurate. So obviously, there's damage control. The last thing we can let the American people understand is, first of all, somebody knew that the attack was coming. They allowed it to occur. And they're using that to justify the war in Iraq, which has nothing at all to do with terrorism. We still haven't got Osama bin Laden. We haven't got Al-Qaeda. And so we're fighting the wrong war in the wrong place. And Americans are dying needlessly.
That will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, En Route to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me tell you about some of the four tape sets we have here, which I think are really so vitally important. And certainly one of the four tape sets would be my tape set on the secret government. And there really is a secret government out there. The interview with Professor Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, talks about how the book that he had written, Professor Quigley had written, called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, was suppressed. Somebody came in and bought up the company, Macmillan, and destroyed the place of the first half of the book. Now, if this sort of thing goes on in America today, we should be concerned. That's the sort of thing they did in Hitler's Germany to control what the German people thought. But that's just what happened to Professor Quigley's book. We do have the book. It is available now, but it was out of print and unavailable for many years through regular channels. Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, goes into the background of the secret society that took over England at the time of the Boer War, at the beginning of the 20th century, and then, of course, fomented the First World War, and then transferred the leadership of this group to the United States in 1921, where they created the Council on Foreign Relations, which was the front for the small American roundtable group in J.P. Morgan. And the Council on Foreign Relations today is our invisible government. You can actually get the four-tape set on the secret government by itself, or you can get the interview with Professor Quigley when you get the Tragedy and Hope special, where you can get the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, and, of course, interview with Professor Quigley. This is all available. We make these sources available so you can check this out, because if it's really true, then no man's life or future or fortune or family are safe today. Help us get the truth out. Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is the time I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener supported, and we hope that many of you out there will decide you'd like to join Radio Liberty and family of supporters. If you would, why, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a copy of our latest newsletter that is available, that would be our March newsletter, which will be available in about 2 weeks. Our February newsletter goes into what happened on the morning of 9/11 and the things led up to it. Our March newsletter, you'll have to request specifically, because that goes into the background of Paul O'Neill's book. Paul O'Neill was the Secretary of the Treasury, and he attended cabinet meetings 8 months before the 9/11 attack, at which they were already planning on going to war with Iraq. And they were already planning on how to divide up the oil 8 months before the 9/11 attack. But of course, you're not going to hear about this through regular channels. You can get the book and read it, or we can certainly get my copy of my newsletter. Hopefully it'll whet your appetite. You'll want to get the book, but you'll have the important things. Everything was planned ahead of time. It had nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction. It had nothing to do with the fact that Osama bin Laden was a wicked man, because he was, but remember, we backed him. We backed him all during the 1980s. And if you read Robert Baer's book, See No Evil, which we also have, he was a CIA agent, the senior CIA agent in Iraq in 1995. We backed him after the Iraq War. But we can't let the American people know that. Why, he's the enemy. We wouldn't back our enemies. Or would we create the best enemies money could buy? Well, we hope that if you'd like to get the March newsletter, you'll give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'd be glad to get that for you. But also, if you'd like to get the video, we have my interview with Professor Sutton. I did it back in 1980. And he had worked at the Hoover Institute for many years, going into the funding of communism and of Adolf Hitler and of Nazism. And, of course, of who financed the North Vietnamese. How was this little country, the size of the state of Mississippi, able to hold off the greatest nation in the world for 10 years in the 1960s and 70s, and then America lost the war? Well, you need to read what Professor Sutton told the Republican National Commission Convention back in 1992 about how we financed the North Vietnamese so we could keep the war going. It's a terrible thing to contemplate, but you have to understand that there are evil and wicked people in the world who are willing to send our boys overseas to fight and bleed and suffer and die for reasons that they will never understand. And most people don't understand Vietnam because it doesn't make sense. Well, you need, of course, to get the book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, or the video, or get them both together, available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You need to get our Vietnam 4-tape set, Vietnam the Untold Story, or better still, get Vietnam Special, and you'll actually get a copy of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report on the boys we abandoned after the First World War, the 25,000 we abandoned during the Second World War to die, and you're never going to hear about this, left them to die in Siberia. They knew that they'd been abandoned. The boys we abandoned in Korea so they could be used for experiments. The boys we abandoned in Vietnam and the other people we abandoned in Laos that you never hear about. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You can get those four tapes out on Vietnam. You can get the book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, or the video. Or we'll be glad to send you a free copy of our newsletter. Because we're involved in a spiritual battle. Unless you understand the evil that's out there, you can't understand anything going on. Pray for America. Pray for our leaders. Pray for our ministers. Pray for revival. Because if this country doesn't turn back to God, why should God ever bless America again? Why shouldn't he bring the same vengeance on this country he brought on the time of Noah, the world at the time of Noah, or the world at the time of Sodom and Gomorrah? We ask you, of course, to remember my ministry. We're at the front lines of this battle. Radio Liberty, pray for our provision and protection. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.